Bag huge savings on your painting projects at Menards. From your kitchen and bath to doors and trim, and even your ceilings, Dutch Boy has the perfect choice for your painting projects. Dutch Boy's DuraFighter is a tough paint and primer that provides great scrub resistance and durability. DuraFighter interior paint starts at $27.75 a gallon. Get an additional 15% savings on all Dutch Boy paints when you put it in the bag. See store for complete details.
Save big money at Menards.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Shedeur Sanders makes his NFL starting debut against the Raiders. Dak Prescott is very likely going to make history against the Eagles. And what does something a team does 12% of the time have anything to do with driving the outcome of Colts at Chiefs? We need the data for all of it. This is The Numbers Game. I'm Cynthia Freeland, and let's break down the remaining 13 NFL games for Week 12. Now that we're fully in the third quarter of the season, I want to ask for your Numbers Game feedback. When I write the show each week, I follow the format of, ideally, two key matchups, one on each side of the ball. And then I back up each of my model's projected scores with a bottom line note, which is almost always the key stat that forecasts to have the most influence driving the outcome of the game. Then I add one player or thing to watch, which is a prop bet for each game. The point, my goal, is to give you the data and context to connect more deeply with each game and the most probable strategy behind all of it. Of course, we always add some extra touchdown lists and such to make it more fun and to give more insights in a quicker format, but I want to know what you think. What do you want more of, less of? Give me your input. The thing I know most about our little Numbers Game community and the thing I love the most is that we all love football. And with 22 moving pieces on each snap, I adore that it is so hard to model out and predict. That is the best part. Our models can compete. My model can go up against your gut. My model can go up against my own gut. But to me, working on the process gives us a better blueprint for what has worked, what hasn't worked, what we're likely to see, and most importantly, why. I get a little, okay, a lot, annoyed when game broadcasters talk about the analytics say in some weird, singular overlord way. Because the reality is, it's about creating a custom plan or selecting the specific tool in a tool belt, if you will, in order to incrementally be more efficient. To overdo this tool analogy, some teams need a wrench, others need a saw, and still others need a screwdriver. They're all tools, but they do very different things. I do acknowledge that it's not very sexy or TV friendly to get into the actual depth needed, and it certainly takes a lot more prep work than it's probably worth it for game callers to understand the nuance between the analytical principles of, say, the Lions versus the Bengals, or even the Lions versus the Eagles, if you know what I'm talking about. But my love letter to you each week are these breakdowns and going under the hood together to see how the whole engine runs together. So yeah, let me know if my intended value proposition is coming through, how it could be even better. Listen, it's just hard not to get sentimental about analytics. We did a TNF episode this week. I hope you didn't miss it, which means we did game picking accounting there. But to recap, in week 11, so not including TNF, my model went 11-4 straight up. A terrible 4-10-1 against the spread and 5-10 on totals. That brings the season through 11 weeks for my model to 64% straight up, 50.3 against the spread and 54.3 on totals. Since there's no international game, we get to start with dog games this week. For each week in November, we're going to support animals in need by all picking winners for the three biggest underdog games of the week. All you have to do to participate is the comment below on YouTube. Or if you're listening on a pod platform, you can enter by sending me a tweet or a comment on my socials. It's C Freeland on X, Cynthia Freeland on Instagram. It is super easy. All you have to do is pick the three games and then add your favorite animal rescue to the comment. You nailed it last week, and we went from over 100-ish entries 2 weeks ago to over 140 last week. Let's get to 200 this week, huh? I'll pick the winner at the end of the segment by selecting the name of the charity out of my trusty helmet, where I added a slip of paper for each entry. Then, by the power of magical editing, I'll show you the receipt for my $100 donation in your animal's name. Dog game number one. It's the Seahawks at the Titans, and Seattle is a 13.5-point road favorite. The total in this one, 40.5. My model says Seattle wins by 12 points, 27-15. Starting with the Seahawk offense against the Titan defense, while Sam Darnold, he has a 23.2 completion percentage over expected on deep passes this season. That's the highest in the NFL in a single season since we started tracking, so 2017. He also has a 1.11 EPA per deep pass. That's second most in the league. The Titans, they have allowed a 17.5 completion percentage over expected two deep passes, the highest rate in the league, along with the third most EPA per deep pass at 1.14. Deep passes are a big part of why Sam Darnold leads the NFL with an average of 9.3 passing yards per attempt and also 14 downfield touchdown passes. Hats off to Clint Kubiak for the offensive game plan, because they're achieving this deep success via the lowest pass play percentage in the league and also Darnold's ability to execute it, which is why he's got the number two completion percentage at 70.2. Tennessee's offense against Seattle's defense, well, Cam Ward, let's talk about him. He's been sacked a league high 41 times. He has a negative 97.8 EPA on sacks this season. That's 38.2 less than the next closest quarterback. Less here means more negative or worse. He's been sacked on 11% of dropbacks, the second highest rate in the league, despite only being blitzed 23% of the time. That is the eighth lowest rate. The Seahawks have generated pressure on 40% of their pass rushes. That's the fourth highest rate in the league, despite only blitzing at the second lowest rate, 21%. Bottom line, I have the Seahawks by 12, 27-15. Sam Darnold has been sacked just 10 times. That's the fewest among qualified quarterbacks. But Seattle has two interior O-line injuries. Starting center Jalen Sundell suffered a knee injury in week 10. He's on IR. And now left guard Gray Zabel is considered day-to-day with a knee injury. Zabel has the second lowest pressure rate among guards allowed at just under 4%. And Titans defensive tackle leads all at the position with 16 quick pressures. He has the fastest time to pressure, 2.48 seconds, among all players with at least 25 pressures. The one to watch here, it's Zach Charbonnet to rush for at least 39 yards. Right now, the UCLA product is averaging 3.3 yards per carry. That is a career low for him and the fewest in the NFL. 96% of his yards have come after contact. That is the highest rate in the league. The Titans have next-gen stats, 29th ranked rushing efficiency defense, which means his potential to earn more yards before that first contact is increased. Dog game number two, it's the Giants at the Lions, where Detroit is a 10.5-point home favorite. The total is 50 points. My model says Dan Campbell's team wins 31-20. Let's start with the Giants offense against the Lions defense. I have voiced my concerns about the Giants O-line for a while now, like years. I'm not the only one, but we need to give some love to Andrew Thomas. We talked about his on-off splits in the past being dramatic in terms of being positive for when he's on the field, but this week he does draw a tough matchup. So Thomas has allowed the longest average time to pressure among all left tackles this season at 4.03 seconds. He's also allowed just the 11th lowest pressure rate at 7.6%. He should see a healthy dose of Aiden Hutchinson, who has the fourth quickest get-off time among edges at 0.76 seconds and a 15.5 pressure rate. That's the 13th highest. It doesn't necessarily get easier for Thomas if Al-Kadeem Muhammad lines up across from him instead of Hutch, as he has a 17.5 pressure rate, which is sixth highest along with six sacks. As for Detroit's offense against New York's defense, let's be super balanced in this analysis and talk about a matchup for an offensive lineman with an edge rusher here. I mean, I could have gone with a lot of different giant pass rushers, but let's go with an edge rusher, as in right tackle Penei Sewell, who's let pressure reach the passer Jared Goff on just 5.2% of his pass sets. That's the second lowest rate at the position. It's also his lowest rate in his five-year career. He's going to have to deal with Brian Burns, the edge rusher for the Giants, who's converted 13 of his 39 pressures into sacks. That is a 33.3% rate, the second highest in the league. He also has a career high with those 13 sacks, despite being chipped on a career high 16% of his pass rushes. Bottom line, I have the Lions winning 31-20, an 11-point win because of the Giants' vulnerability to the run. Okay, every week I've talked about it, and it remains true. So let's talk about play action here, because it's related to the run game. And Jared Goff is coming off a rough outing against Philly. So Jared Goff has used play action at the sixth highest rate in the league, over 30% of his dropbacks. He's averaging 9.9 yards per play action pass, the fourth most in the league. He has the third most EPA per dropback with play action at 0.45, and 57.4% of his play action passes have been deemed successes by Next Gen Stats, which is the sixth highest rate in the league. The Giants, they've allowed 0.16 EPA per dropback versus play action, 10th most, along with a 112.6 passer rating to it, which is the ninth highest, and an explosive pass, so over 15 yards on 22% of opponent play action dropbacks. That's the 10th highest rate in the league. Let me pull out my Dan Campbell play caller glasses here for the one to watch. It is, it's Jameson Williams to have at least 61 receiving yards. He has 65 plus and at least one touchdown in each of the past three games. I'm obviously talking about play calling here because Dan Campbell dials up more Jameson Williams. We get it. Okay, so let's talk about what happens when Jared Goff targets him against man coverage. Oh, Goff's passer rating goes to 153.9 since the beginning of last season. That's the highest among all players with at least 20 targets versus man, and he has three touchdowns of at least 30 yards. Bananas. Moving on to our third dog game, it's the Jets at the Ravens. Baltimore is a 13.5 point home favorite. The total on this one, 44.5. I have Baltimore by 11, 30-19. Starting with the Jets offense, who's now starting Tyrod Taylor, against the Ravens defense. So the Jets have seen their quarterback under pressure on 47% of dropbacks. That's the highest rate in the league, technically. I say seen their quarterback under pressure as opposed to allowed their quarterback to be pressured, and technically, to kind of distinguish that the number is perhaps misleading in the high direction. I asked three separate offensive coaches to estimate how much of the pressure Justin Fields had been under was due to the offensive line and how much was perhaps due to him not getting rid of the ball as fast as the play design might have dictated. None of the people I asked were calling plays for him, nor do they know him well. But the estimates range from 40 to 60% being on Fields, meaning it's conceivable that the pressure rate won't look as daunting numerically with Tyrod Taylor under center, especially considering the Ravens have just generated the fifth lowest pressure rate at 29%. However, the Ravens do have 38 unblocked pressures. That's the third most in the league. Just so you know, Tyrod Taylor in like the one game sample size is actually better under pressure, averaging 7 yards per attempt compared to just 4.4 from a clean pocket. Switching to Baltimore's offense against New York's defense, let's talk about inside rushes by running backs, so not Lamar Jackson, since week 6. They're averaging 1.1 rushing yard over expected. That's third most, along with the second most yards before contact per inside rush at 1.7 and a 0.05 EPA per inside rush, which is the sixth most in the league. And how does the Jets defense fare against these inside rushes by running backs? Well, let's look at their season numbers, which, by the way, include a giant man who's now a Cowboy. Well, the Jets overall have allowed 0.9 rushing yard over expected per inside rush to running backs, the sixth most, along with the third most yards after contact per inside rush at 3.7. Bottom line in this one, I have Baltimore winning 30-19, which gets the Ravens one step closer to joining the 1970 Bengals, 2015 Chiefs, 2018 Colts, and 2020 Washington team as the only ones in NFL history to start 1-5 or worse and make the playoffs. Baltimore, they're only one game behind the Steelers for first place in the AFC North. The one to watch here, I totally set myself up for this one with the rushing stat by running backs, but Derrick Henry to score a touchdown. We talked about it. Those numbers against inside rushes came with Quinnen Williams. And now there's a giant Quinnen Williams-sized hole in the front of the Jets' defense, and the rushing opportunity is now even more favorable against the Jets. Those are the three dog games of the week. So if it were me commenting, I would say I have Seattle, Detroit, and Baltimore. And then I would add the Detroit dog.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Dog rescue, because that is who saved Clyde, and it only seems right because Detroit is one of my picks. I could also add Hollywood Huskies, which is where Gordy came from, but it makes sense to have Detroit. Remember to leave your dog picks in the comments on my socials to get your animal rescue in the mix. Now the fun part, to pick from last week. Okay, so here is my helmet. There are a bunch of these things in here. I'm going to hold it above my head. Just make sure they're all in there. All right, I got one right here. Okay. It is the Redwood Coast Humane Society. That's me reading backwards. can you see it? Redwood Coast Humane Society. And thanks to the magic of editing, my awesome producer will put in a graphic to show that a $100 donation has been made to the Redwood Coast Humane Society, because Numbers Game and this community, we love saving animals. Let's go next to two interesting AFC matchups. The first one, New England at Cincinnati. The Patriots are 8.5-point road favorites, and the total in this one is 49 points. My model says Patriots win 30-17. Let's start with the Patriots offense against the Bengals defense first. What happens when you don't blitz Drake May? Well, he averages 8.7 yards per pass. That's second most in the league. He has a 7.6 completion percentage over expected. That's the third highest rate. And a 0.14 EPA per dropback, the eighth most in the league. Why do I ask? Well, the Bengals, they blitz at the lowest rate this season, just 18% of the time. They've allowed a 0.18 EPA per dropback without the blitz, the third most, and a 51% dropback success rate when they don't blitz. That's the third highest. On the other side, what about Cincinnati's offense without Ja'Marr Chase against New England's defense without Milton Williams? What happens when you do blitz Joe Flacco? Well, he's 43 of 85 for 2 touchdowns and 5 interceptions. That's tied for the most against the blitz. He has a 53.8 passer rating. That's second lowest. And he's one of only 2 quarterbacks with more interceptions than touchdowns against the blitz. New England has blitzed at just the 10th lowest rate, 25%. But when they do, they get pressure 49% of the time. That's the 5th highest rate in the league. No Milton Williams will be impactful, but it gives Christian Barmore an opportunity to build off of last week where he had a big game. Barmore actually leads all defensive tackles with 37 pressures this season. Milton Williams, who only has 32, that ranks 4th. Just kidding, he's awesome. They're the only defensive tackle duo to both appear in the top 5 of total pressures at the position, and their combined 69 pressures make them the only duo in the league with more than 60 combined pressures. Bottom line, I have a 13-point win for the Pats on the road, 30-17. Drake May has completed 78% of his passes. That's the 5th highest rate in the league, for 12 touchdowns with just 3 interceptions when throwing from a clean pocket. The Bengals defense has only generated pressure on 28.5% of dropbacks, the 4th lowest rate. When they fail to get pressure, they've allowed 19 passing touchdowns, which is tied for the 2nd most, and the 8th highest passer rating of 112.5. The one to watch here is Travion Henderson to keep the touchdown magic going and reach pay dirt. He leads the NFL with 5 touchdowns since week 10, making him the 2nd rookie in NFL history with 2 or more touchdowns in 2 straight weeks. Curtis Martin in 1995 is the other. And the Bengals, they have allowed a league high, so worst, 160.9 rushing yards per game. Moving on to an exciting one in the desert when the Browns head to Las Vegas to take on the Raiders, who are favored by 3 points. The total in this one, 37 points. My model says Raiders win 21-19. Ah, the Shedeur Sanders starting quarterback debut is upon us. Let's start with the Browns offense against the Raiders defense. What did we learn last week when he came in relief of the injured Dylan Gabriel? Shedeur Sanders went 4 of 16 for 47 yards, no touchdowns, 1 interception, and had a 13.5 passer rating. It was also a loss. He was pressured 11 times, including taking 2 sacks. He had a negative 0.79 EPA per dropback, so a loss, which was the 4th worst by any quarterback with at least 14 pass attempts in a game this season. He attempted 4 quick passes in that game, so those are happening in under 2.5 seconds. 3 fell incomplete, and 1 was an interception. Raiders star Max Crosby currently ranks 1st in the NFL in tackles for loss with 119 and 2nd in quarterback pressures with 447 since entering the NFL in 2019. As for Las Vegas' offense against Cleveland's defense, well, Geno Smith has been pressured on 35% of his dropbacks, the 14th highest rate, with opposing defenses converting sacks on 25% of their pressures. So that's the 6th highest rate among quarterbacks. He will face Myles Garrett, who's generated pressure on 17% of his pass rushes, leading to 42 pressures. That's tied for the 6th most at his position. And 15 of those have resulted in sacks, which is a 36% pressure to sack ratio, pacing all edge rushers this season. Bottom line, I have the Raiders winning by 2 points, 21-19. As we know, Geno Smith has thrown 13 total interceptions. That is tied for the most in the league. But only 2 of them have come against man coverage. He has the same number of passing touchdowns against man and zone with 6 apiece, but 11 interceptions versus zone versus just 2 against man, and the Browns play man at the highest rate in the league, just 42%. The one to watch here is both fun and the math supports it. It's Shedeur Sanders to throw for more than 159 yards. The Raiders' run defense is stronger than its pass defense overall, and with a week to nail some of those shorter and faster concepts, along with a game script that dictates potentially passing later in the game, Sanders passes this 159-yard threshold in 60% of my simulations. I'm not saying it won't make you sweat watching it or that it will look gorgeous from the pocket. I'm saying that I agree with his assessment that the game's got to speak. And I think what the game will speak is at least 160 passing yards. Before we move to the next set of games, here are my confidence picks for the week in order. These are just to pick winners and not with point spreads factored in or totals. You can get my against the spread and total confidence numbers on the numbers game, numbersga.me, if you want those. The next three games involve two interconference matchups and one NFC tilt that all have pretty important playoff implications for at least one team involved. In this first game, it is actually both teams, and that is Pittsburgh at Chicago. Right now, the Bears are favored by 2.5 points, and the total in this one is 45 points. My model says Chicago wins by 1 point, 24-23. Starting with the Steelers offense against the Bears defense, I say for now, this is where Vegas and my model sit. Why? Because Aaron Rodgers is reportedly going to try to go. So my projection is with him playing, but not being at 100% health. Now, I'll update that if anything changes. Rodgers has averaged 5.1 yards per attempt against man coverage. That's the fifth fewest among qualified quarterbacks. He has thrown 9 touchdowns and 2 interceptions on such attempts. It could be a good opportunity for him to increase his yard per attempt average against man because the Bears have allowed a league high 8.4 yards per play when playing man. That's at least 0.6 more than any other team and more than any team since at least 2018 when we started tracking. And by the way, they play man on 29% of dropbacks. That's slightly more than the league average of 28%. And on the Chicago offense against Pittsburgh defense side of things, well, let's talk about outside runs, which the Bears have done at the third highest rate, 62%. They've earned the fourth most EPA per outside rush. That's 0.08. And they have a rushing success rate of 49%, which is second highest on such runs. By the way, there's more good data here, too. They also have the third most yards before contact per outside rush by running backs at 1.8 yards. And they've earned 10 or more yards on 18% of outside rushes, the third highest explosive run rate in the league. Now, Pittsburgh's defense, they've allowed the eighth most yards after contact per outside rush by running backs at 3.9 and a 33% missed tackle rate to them, the eighth highest rate. Bottom line here, I have Chicago winning 24-23. This is an example of my gut and math diverging a bit in terms of the game winner. My gut says if Rodgers plays, it's a W for the Steelers, which I guess aligns with my against the spread pick. Why the slight edge for Chicago per the math, though? Well, Aaron Rodgers has attempted downfield passes on just 22% of his attempts. That's the lowest rate among quarterbacks. The short game is where he is focused. He has 1,371 yards, that's fourth most, and 9 touchdowns, with just 1 interception on these sub-10 air yarders. But the Bears' defense has been good against such passes. They've allowed the fifth fewest yards at 989, and they have 5 interceptions on these short passes, which is tied for the second most in the league. The one to watch here, it's Caleb Williams to have exactly 1 passing touchdown. He's only passed this number once in 7 games. Right now, his completion percentage is sub 60%. It's 59.7, and it ranks 31st of 34 qualified quarterbacks. If you want to support the opposite of this argument, you could look to the fact that his 8 passing touchdowns to 0 interception ratio against the blitz are very good, and the Steelers blitz at the 6th highest rate, 33%, or the fact that they're allowing the most passing yards per game in the league at 261.7. But my math says 1 passing touchdown. Because Pittsburgh has 75 quick pressures, second most in the league behind Denver, and they rank top 3 in the NFL in both sacks, 33, and takeaways with 18, meaning run the football. Next up is a big one for the away team in terms of the AFC playoff race. That's Jacksonville at Arizona. The Jags are 2.5-point road favorites. The total in this one, 47.5. My model has them pulling it off by 1 point, 25-24. Starting with that Jags offense against the Cardinals defense, well, Jacksonville operates best when they can run. So let's look at rushing attempts when the quarterback is under center. It's something that they have done at the 9th highest rate in the league. 71% of their running back rushes have come with the quarterback under center. They're averaging 4.8 yards per rush in this situation. That's 4th most. And 0.01 EPA per rush. That's 6th most. And Jacksonville also has a 46% rushing success rate in this circumstance, 8th highest. And how has Arizona's defense fared in this circumstance? So they've allowed a 51% rushing success rate by running backs when the quarterback has been under center, the highest in the league, along with the 7th highest explosive run rate at 13% and the 7th most EPA per rush. Oh, and overall, just the 9th most yards at 4.6 yards per rush to running backs with their quarterback under center. Switching to Arizona's offense against Jacksonville's defense. Okay, we see you, Jacoby Brissett, out here trying to be a trivia answer, a Jeopardy answer in the future with those record 47 completions on 57 attempts against the Niners last week. He netted 452 yards with two touchdowns and two picks, which was a success rate of 55%. Now, the Niners blitzed him on just 10.5% of dropbacks. Brissett completed all six of his pass attempts against the blitz for 84 yards. Against four or fewer pass rushers, he went 41 of 51 for 368 with two touchdowns and two interceptions. The Jags defense blitzes on just over 30% of dropbacks, which is above the league average of 28.5%. Bottom line, I have a 25-24 win for Jacksonville. The Jags have some extremely confusing stats week to week, but they are effective at scoring with an average of 31.3 points per game since their week 8 bye, which is fourth in the NFL. And they lead the league with 8 rushing touchdowns since week 9, despite averaging just 3.8 yards per rush, which ranks 25th. Their edge in the run game drives their slight edge over the Cardinals in points. The one to watch here, let's make it a high probability pick and say Travis Etienne touchdown for all of the rushing reasons I already mentioned. I wanted to go with the Trey McBride number. He has 6 receiving touchdowns in 5 games with Brissett, as opposed to 5 in 39 games with Kyler Murray. He has 5 or more receptions in 12 straight games. That's the third longest streak by a tight end all time. But the number is all the way up at 7.5. I have him forecast with 7 receptions, and I don't like being on the fewer side of an equation. I'm a conservative modeler, so you could consider a Trey McBride touchdown. This last one is interesting because Carolina could really use the win, even though they have more wins this season than their full season totals from the past 2 years. They're a very long shot, but still have a chance to make the playoffs, though. I have San Francisco forecast as the 7th seed by a strong margin. However, this could...
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Take a dig out of their odds should the Niners lose this game. It's Panthers at Niners. San Francisco is a 6.5-point home favorite. The total in this one, 48 points. My model says the Niners pull it off 27-19. Starting with the Panthers offense against the Niners defense, let's look at a circumstance where Rico Dowdle has rushed for the second most yards in the league, 546, and averaged 6.3 yards per carry. That's third most. It's when the Panthers have been in 11 personnel. 15 of his 20 explosive rushes have come from this personnel grouping, and from all other groupings, he's averaging just 3.5 yards per carry. And how does the Niners defense fare against running backs when rushing out of 11 personnel? Well, they've allowed 4.3 yards per rush, and 2.8 of those have come after contact per carry. That's fourth fewest when offenses have rushed from 11 personnel. Only 3 teams have not allowed a touchdown to this situation, and San Francisco is one of them. They also have accomplished this using light boxes on 88% of such runs, which is the highest rate in the league. I know what you're thinking, Sin, is that stat blended with Fred Warner in it? Yes, so let's go a little bit deeper. With Warner in the lineup from weeks 1-5, the Niners held opponents to 3.6 yards per carry on design runs between the tackles. 0.9 of those were yards before contact, and they had a 21% stuff rate. In weeks 6-11, that number has gone up to 4.2 yards per inside rush with 1.3 before contact and a 9.5 stuff rate. Why do I point this out? Well, Dowdle has averaged 4.2 to the inside as opposed to 6.3 on the outside. In other words, the direction of the run matters, but the Niners are still good at stopping rushes when offenses use 11. As for San Francisco's offense against Carolina's defense, in honor of this being the first time Christian McCaffrey has faced his old team, let's do a CMC stat. He's forced a league-high 72 missed tackles on his touches, and his 300 yards gained off of missed tackles are the 6th most in the league. He leads the league with 268 touches and has still managed to force missed tackles at the 14th highest rate, 27%. The Panthers have missed 13% of their tackle attempts this season, the 10th highest rate in the league, and they've allowed 585 yards, the 8th most, following missed tackles. Bottom line, I have the Niners by 8, 27-19. Let's do one more good San Francisco defending the run note here, because that's the difference maker for me in this one. This one is about light boxes. The Niners have used it at the 4th highest rate, 48%, to defend running back rushes. They are allowing the 3rd fewest rushing yards over expected per rush at -0.08 and the 6th fewest EPA per rush with a light box at -0.18. By the way, in terms of explosive runs allowed, so 10 plus yard rushes, They're just allowing 7.3% of rushing attempts to net more than 10 yards when they use the light box. That's the fourth lowest rate in the league. Carolina has earned an explosive rush on 6.7% of their attempts against light boxes. That's the third lowest rate in the league. And they're below league average in rushing yards over expected per rush, EPA per rush, and rushing success rate by running backs against light boxes this season. Since this one is the Monday Nighter, we need to do stat snacks here. Three things to track in this game. I feel like we need to make some sort of bingo card or like a follow-along game. Let me know. Someone more creative than me can totally let me know what they think about that. But back to the matter at hand, which is our three stat snacks for Monday Night Football, the Panthers at Niners. Number one, Christian McCaffrey to score a touchdown against his former team. It doesn't necessarily need to be on the ground. It just needs to happen anytime and anytime away from the Panthers defensive tackle, Derrick Brown, who, when he's on the field, the Panthers give up one fewer yard per design run compared to when he's off the field. Number two, Teteroa McMillan to have at least five receptions. By the way, his mom told me at the draft, like to my face, he doesn't like to be called Tet. It's either T-Mac or Teteroa. So we're going Teteroa here. He's been targeted 26 times against man coverage. That's tied for the 11th most. He caught 15 of those for 256 yards. That's actually the fourth most yards and a touchdown. I know he should see some Diamador Lenore, who's been targeted 12 times on 121 snaps in man coverage. That's just a 10% target rate, which is the lowest of any corner. And he's allowed six receptions for 64 yards with just one touchdown. It is a position low, 0.5 yards per snap allowed. I don't care, though, because he could also find a different corner to line up against. And McMillan just made AJ Terrell look not as elite last week. So my model says at least five grabs. And number three, a George Kittle touchdown. He has 23 receiving touchdowns in 36 games with Purdy as a starter compared to 27 in 83 games with all other Niner quarterbacks. That 23 touchdowns is the second most by any San Francisco quarterback tight end duo. At least five receptions is way safer, but the touchdown is more fun, so let's go with that. The next two games are NFC divisional games, and the first one is important for the postseason. It's Minnesota at Green Bay. The Packers are 6.5-point home favorites. The total in this one, 40.5. But what does my model say? A 7-point win for the Packers. You're going to love the score. It sounds football-y, 24-17. The Vikings offense against the Packers defense is where we'll start. J.J. McCarthy is the only qualified quarterback with a higher completion percentage under pressure. It's 54.3%. Then from a clean pocket, which is 52.1%. Of his eight total interceptions, seven have been when he was not under pressure. He's also faced man coverage on 37% of his dropbacks. That's the third highest rate. Five of those interceptions have come against man. The Packers play man at only the seventh lowest rate, 20%, but they've allowed the fewest yards per play when they do at just 3.6. Further, it's fair to say that the Packers' pressure is more likely to force quicker and shorter passes. Opposing passers have averaged the second fewest air yards per attempt at 8, but have recorded the second highest completion percentage at 60% on passes under pressure against the Packers' defense this season. So what I'm saying here is that we're likely to see more rhythm passing, so shorter and quicker stuff, to avoid Micah Parsons and crew, because McCarthy's pressure stats are a little noisy and need extra context to be useful. But the thing is pressure, so McCarthy will need to stay away from Parsons. As for Green Bay's offense against Minnesota's defense, Jordan Love has faced pressure on 34% of his dropbacks. That's the highest rate across his three career seasons as a qualified passer. He isn't just taking sacks, though, as he's only been sacked 16 times on 116 pressured dropbacks. That is the seventh lowest pressure-to-sack rate. Interestingly, when he has been sacked, it's been costly, as he's lost 7.6 yards per sack. On average, that's the fifth most. The Vikings defense, they've generated a league-high 44% pressure rate following their week six bye, but have converted on just 17% of those pressures into sacks during that span. That's below the season-long NFL league average of 19%. And remember, center Elgton Jenkins is on IR now as well. Bottom line, look at this football score. I have a 24-17 win forecast for the Packers. With rounding, it is closer to 8 points. So if the number moves to 7, it's okay. It's still more than the number, if you're picking up what I'm putting down. You know where I'm going with this point, though, right? There will be blitzing. Brian Flores, his defenses, they always blitz. So how does Jordan Love fare against the blitz? Okay, just to reiterate, Minnesota, their blitz rate, it tops the NFL at 48%. And Jordan Love, he's averaged 8.8 yards per pass against the blitz, the seventh most. He also has a 6.1 completion percentage over expected when people have rushed an extra passer against him. That's fifth highest. and his 0.34 EPA per dropback against the blitz is the third highest in the NFL. The one to watch here, TJ Hockenson to catch at least three passes. This follows from my likely path of JJ McCarthy leveraging quicker, shorter passes against the pressure from a Micah Parsons, who has eight sacks, 17 quarterback hits, 57 quarterback pressures. He leads the NFL with 57 quarterback pressures. And by the way, the rest of the Packers front is really good as well. Next up, it's Atlanta at New Orleans. The Saints are 1.5-point favorites. The total in this one, 39.5. My model says the underdogs win. Atlanta wins 21-20. Let's start off with a note about Kirk Cousins, who is now leading the Falcons offense, and they're also without Drake London. However, Falcons quarterbacks have aligned in pistol on 49% of snaps. That's more than double that of any other team this season. And when they do, they've called run 67% of the time. That is above the league average of 63%. Bijan Robinson has accumulated 690 rushing yards from pistol alignment this season. That's more than any other running back. As for my Saints note, well, Tyler Shuck has a 40.9 completion percentage against the blitz this season, which would be the lowest among qualified quarterbacks. He hasn't taken enough pass attempts yet to be qualified. And Atlanta, we know they're going to blitz. They have a 47% blitz rate this season. That is second highest. Them and Minnesota keep jockeying for first or second, but they are the only two teams who are over 40% this year. And their 16% sack rate with the blitz is the highest in the NFL, they being the Falcons in this case. They've also allowed a negative 0.16 EPA per dropback when blitzing, the fifth fewest in the NFL. Bottom line, I have the Falcons with the upset 21-20 because of the defense. In their Week 10 win against the Panthers, Tyler Shuck was pressured on just 27% of his 30 dropbacks. That's the lowest rate faced by a Saints starting quarterback this season. It follows that he had an average time to throw of 3 seconds, which was the longest average time to throw by a Saints starter. This does not forecast to be the case against the Falcons and their heavy blitzing front. The one to watch here, it's Chris Olave to have more than 65 yards. His average 1 second burst this season is 9.24 miles per hour. That's 0.18 miles per hour faster than any other player. That has helped him earn 429 receiving yards on passes, traveling 10 plus yards this season, 10th most in the NFL, and he has 3 touchdowns on them. Speaking of touchdowns, let's do a list of touchdown scorers, and let's go with the top end guys, as in 5 big names who forecast to have big games and reach pay dirt. Number 1, staying in that last game, Falcons running back Bijan Robinson against the Saints. He has accounted for 38% of the Falcons' scrimmage yards. That is the highest rate in the NFL. And he's the only player with at least 750 yards on the ground and at least 500 yards receiving. Number 2, Seahawks wide receiver Jaxon Smith-Njigba against the Titans. The first player in NFL history with at least 75 or more receiving yards in each of his team's first 10 games in a season. He also leads the league in receiving yards by 238, and the Titans have allowed 167.4 receiving yards per game to wide receivers. That's the third most. Number 3, Lions running back Jahmyr Gibbs against the Giants. You didn't think I was going to let New York's run defense not get picked on, did you? But I found a new stat to use to talk about how much of a problem it is. Get this. Gibbs has reached the fastest speed of any player when rushing the football this season, 22.34 miles per hour. He's passed 15 miles per hour on 21% of his rushes, the fourth highest rate. The Giants have allowed opposing rushers to exceed 15 miles per hour on 72 carries this season, the third most, allowing 539 rushing yards over expected on them, the most, and an 81% success rate to them, the highest. Number 4, Bengals receiver T. Higgins against the Pats. In 5 career games without Ja'Marr Chase, Higgins has averaged 8.8 targets per game, 6.2 receptions per game, 102.2 receiving yards per game, and 3 receiving touchdowns. He also has 1 or more receiving touchdowns in 9 straight home games. That's tied for the third longest streak in NFL history. 5, Philadelphia's running back Saquon Barkley against Dallas. The rematch of Eagles at Cowboys all the way back from week 1. This time around, Philadelphia is a 3.5-point favorite. The total is 49.5 points. My model says Eagles win 27-23. Starting with the Eagles offense against the Cowboys defense, let's talk about Jalen Hurts and the deep pass. He's done it on 16% of his attempts this season, the second highest rate. He has the fifth highest completion percentage over expected on them at 9.5%, and the third most EPA per deep pass attempt at 0.84. Dallas, they have allowed 9 deep passing touchdowns, the most in the NFL. The next closest team is Chicago with 6. They've allowed the fourth highest completion percentage over expected at 12%.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. You bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
And the second most EPA per deep pass at 1.42. Now, deep passes will be harder without right tackle Lane Johnson and factoring in Quinnen Williams, who has 5 quarterback hits and 1.5 sacks since his Dallas debut in Week 11. Switching to Dallas's offense against Philadelphia's defense, in Week 1, Javonte Williams carried the ball 15 times for 54 yards and 2 touchdowns. 44 yards and both touchdowns came on 11 carries between the tackles. Jalen Carter, remember, got ejected early in that game. And it was the first time the Eagles have allowed multiple touchdowns on carries between the tackles since drafting Carter in 2023. Other things that are new since this last matchup, well, we saw the Cowboys use motion and they have the lowest pressure rate allowed on Dak so far last season when they played the Raiders. And of course, there's always Jalen Phillips for the Eagles, who's tied for the lead with 13 pressures since Week 10. There are other changes too to the defense, but those big ones, Quinnen Williams, Jalen Phillips, those are the two biggest ones. Bottom line, I have Philadelphia by 4 points, 27-23. Philadelphia's defense is a major factor in this one, even though Dallas's offense has proven their ability to score. Last time around, we saw Jalen Hurts scramble on 39% of his dropbacks. That is actually a season high league-wide and his highest scramble rate in a game since 2023. He gained 63 yards and 2 touchdowns on 9 scramble runs. Following that game, he has scrambled to run just 19 total times for 121 yards and 6 first downs with no scores. Maybe this is where Kevin Petullo busts out the passing game. Maybe to Saquon, we shall see. The one to watch here is Dallas Goedert to catch at least 4 passes. He's hauled in 30 of 37 targets under 10 air yards for 206 yards and a team-high 6 touchdowns this season. That is tied for the second most touchdowns of any pass catcher league-wide on such passes. Two division leaders are squaring off on Sunday Night Football. From the NFC South, it's the Bucks, and from the NFC West, it's the Rams. It's Sunday Night Football. It's Bucks at Rams, the home team. They're favored by 6.5 points. The total in this one, 49.5, and I have the Rams winning by 6 points, 27-21. Let's start with the Bucks offense against the Rams defense. Well, my note here is about Baker Mayfield, who's thrown 9 touchdown passes against zone coverage this season. That is tied for the 7th most in the league. He has thrown just 1 interception against zone. Of the 34 qualified quarterbacks, Mayfield is one of just 4 to throw for 1 or fewer interceptions against zone. Jalen Hurts, Jordan Love, and Justin Fields are the others. However, of that group of 4 quarterbacks, Mayfield's 9 touchdowns are 6 more than the next closest guy, who's Jalen Hurts, with just 3. The matchup here, well, the Rams defense has utilized zone coverage on 81% of dropbacks this season. That's the 4th highest rate in the league. As for Los Angeles's offense against Tampa's D, well, Matthew Stafford has used play action on 36% of his dropbacks this season. That's the highest rate in the NFL. He has a 129.5 passer rating with play action, the 4th best. He also has a 53% dropback success rate with play action. That's 10th highest. And Tampa, they've allowed 11.3 yards per pass attempt to play action passes, the most in the league, along with a 0.25 EPA per dropback, which is 6th most. And if you're looking for explosive passing plays using play action, well, Tampa Bay has allowed an explosive play on 27% of their play action passes faced this season. That's the 4th highest rate in the league. Bottom line in this one, I have the Rams by 6, 27-21. Now, I'm going to say for now. The reason why it's closer than the number is because the Rams put 3 guys on IR this week, including an O lineman. The reason that I say for now is because I saw a lot of guys designated as ill or having an illness, including Baker Mayfield. Now, they have since come back to practice, but that's a lot of people to be sick. So just keep an eye on this one flipping to be a cover for the Rams based on kind of later injury news or kind of updates about this illness situation. But one note on why I like the Rams so much is that they lead the NFL with 45 red zone drives, and Tampa Bay is allowing a touchdown on 64% of opponent red zone drives, the 7th worst rate in the league. The one to watch here, a Kyren Williams touchdown. The Rams in the red zone are really crushing it right now with these well laid out plans to have defenses choose between Kyren Williams or Davante Adams. It kind of feels like a goalie against penalty kicks. I choose both, but for the odds situation, I think Kyren Williams has higher odds. I saved the best game of the week for last. This could be maybe the biggest in-season game I can remember at Arrowhead. It's, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong on that one, but I can't remember a bigger in-season game at Arrowhead. Anyways, Colts come to town. Kansas City is favored by 3.5 points at home. The total in this one, 50.5. My model says the Kansas City Chiefs win by 4, 27-23. Starting with the Colts offense against the Chiefs defense. In the run game, Jonathan Taylor, he's forced a league-high 67 missed tackles on rushes this season. He has forced a missed tackle on over one-third of his carries, so 35%. That is his career best. After forcing missed tackles, what happens? Well, he's gained 553 yards, which is just 142 yards shy of the highest mark by a running back in a season since 2018, and he still has 7 games left to play. On carries by running backs, the Chiefs have missed tackles at the third lowest rate this season, just 17%. Additionally, they've allowed the 6th fewest rushing yards after missing a tackle this season at just 180. In the passing game, Daniel Jones has completed over 70% of his pass attempts using play action. He's averaging the 5th most yards per attempt on them at 9.2. Now the Chiefs, they've allowed a league-high 81% completion percentage against play action this season, as well as the 2nd most yards per attempt at 11. Now for Kansas City's offense against Indianapolis's defense. In the run game, entering week 12, the Chiefs, almost surprisingly, have the 8th highest explosive run rate in the NFL at 12%. Why? Well, their quarterback on scrambles, of course. Mahomes has the 2nd most scramble rushes with 38 and the 3rd most scramble rushing yards at 287 and a league-high 13 explosive runs on scrambles. Over the past 2 games, which were losses, Mahomes has been held to just 2 scramble rushes for 8 yards. Without DeForest Buckner for the Colts to stop Mahomes on these scramble rushes, they will become even more challenging for the Colts to handle. In the passing game, Patrick Mahomes has averaged 7.7 yards per attempt against split safety coverages, primarily looking to Rashee Rice, whose 31% target rate against split safety is 4th highest among all NFL pass catchers. The Colts defensive coordinator, Lou Anarumo, who used to be the Bengals defensive coordinator, really started that split safety against Mahomes trend in the Bengals Super Bowl season. This year, he's only used it for the Colts defense about 42% of the time, which is right about the league average. But the Colts have allowed the 3rd highest success rate to it at 52% and 7.8 yards per attempt to it, which is the 8th highest. Likely, Lou will go back to the playbook on this one here. Also, we don't really exactly know if Sauce is going to come in and shadow Rice or not, but we do know that the Colts get Charvarius Ward back, which should help their secondary. Bottom line, I have a 27-23 win for the home team, which means the Chiefs take one step closer to getting back into the playoff picture, in part because of how Mahomes succeeds when he's not blitzed. So when he is not blitzed, so against no blitz, Mahomes is averaging 7.7 yards per pass. That's 10th most in the league, with the 5th highest dropback success rate at 52% and the most EPA per dropback when teams don't blitz him at 0.26. Now, Indianapolis, they blitz at a rate of 27%. That's just about 2 percentage points below the league average. They've allowed a 49% dropback success rate without blitzing. That is 6th highest, and also the 10th most yards per pass without blitzing at 7.3. The one to watch here, it's Tyler Warren to have at least 5 receptions. I like him to have at least 51 receiving yards too, but 5 receptions has a greater probability of occurring. He's averaging 2.2 yards per route run, the 4th most of the position, the most yak among tight ends at 392 yards, and he's been the main target for the play-action passes that we talked about from Daniel Jones. And by the way, he's also forced the 5th most tackles at his position. Let's do good for 6 on just these last 3 games. So 6 stats to track in order of most to least probable, but they all occurred at least 48% of my simulations. Number 1, in honor of Dak Prescott needing only 160 yards to pass Tony Romo for the most in Cowboys franchise history. By the way, Romo's number is 34,183 yards. Let's start there. I have Prescott earning 228 in my model, taking over and adding to his legacy. Number 2, Patrick Mahomes to throw at least 2 passing touchdowns against the Colts. Number 3, Jalen Hurts to throw at least 2 passing touchdowns against the Cowboys. Number 4, Jonathan Taylor to score a touchdown. I know it seems automatic, but the Chiefs defense will look to emulate the Steelers. Number 5, CeeDee Lamb to net at least 75 receiving yards against the Eagles. This one's a little lofty, feels a little lofty, which is why it's a 5 or more risky, but my guess is he goes back into the slot more. He's only been there on 32% of snaps this season. That is a career low, but he has a career high 3.1 yards per route run when doing so, so I think efficiency rules the day here. And number 6, Patrick Mahomes to rush for at least 23 yards. That is it. That is the show for week 12, all of week 12's games broken down the way we do it here at Numbers Game. Thank you so much for hanging out. It always means so much to me. Make sure to like, subscribe, comment, all of the things. in part because next week with Thanksgiving, you know who's going to be back, as in my mom, who is going to maybe say some crazy things. Maybe you can help me ask her, coax her to come back on, because the woman has great football takes. What can I say? She's just the best. I have one more note before we get out of here, and this is a comment that I've seen a lot, so I want to answer it right here. It's about how I get my results. So my model, it's actually several models, takes the probability of earning a first down or touchdown or stopping it on each drive to create a blueprint. So both positions and position groups and sides of the ball, they all have blueprints, and then their opponent has one as well. Then what happens is that data gets compared to 8 seasons of past data to find matches or doppelgangers, if you will. And that shows how things played out in real life. So this is a training data and the training set. Then I run 1 million forward-looking simulations of each game to play out the probabilities. You can call this a Monte Carlo simulation. You can say I work with expected values. And yes, it is similar to both Madden and how actual sports books make their markets or odds. This is why I have a lot more close games or weird numbers for scores. There are always a lot of comments about this, but if you think about it, just take a step back and say, what is the probability of earning a touchdown, of earning a field goal? And so you can see how those things create weird numbers. So let's just be, you know, if you had an equal opportunity to score a field goal or a touchdown, so it'd be half would be 3. Half would be 6. So your answer would be 4.5 if you kind of see how that, I hope that makes sense. Maybe that makes sense. Let me know if that makes sense. Either way, thank you so much for hanging out. Keep your comments coming. This is a dialogue. I work for you. I want this to be the best show possible. I want you to share it with all of your friends because you love it so much. So help me make it that way for you. I am your analytics department. I want to look for stats and trends and things that you want to dig deeper on, because number one, that's what I love doing. And number two, this is an awesome community of really smart people who ask awesome questions. So just ask me the question and I will go out and do the research for you. Remember again, subscribe, like all the things, but most importantly, enjoy the football.
You live for planning the perfect trip. The thrill of comparing hotels, scoring that impossible reservation, and piecing together an unforgettable itinerary. You already think like a travel advisor, so why not just be one? Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan vacations and help others travel well. As a Fora advisor, you'll be set up for success with best-in-class training, powerful booking tools, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider tips. Fora helps you turn your love of planning vacations into a business with a flexible, meaningful stream of income, with commission on every hotel, cruise, and activity you book. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred partners, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout, giving you and your clients the kind of elevated travel experiences regular travelers simply don't get. Getting started is as easy as booking trips for people you already know. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/earn. That's foratravel.com/earn.